Penguin Random House presents The Long Game by Vijay Gokhale. Read by Derek Denzel. To the officers of the Indian Foreign Service. Preface. A beginning. China is our largest neighbor, and the country with which we have had prolonged negotiations on a variety of issues since 1950. This book explores how China negotiated with India from the early years after independence until the present, and what lessons India may draw from this about negotiating with the Chinese. It explores this through six important events in our bilateral relationship, which covers the period from 1949 to 2019. These are, number 1, recognition by the Government of India of the People's Republic of China on 30th December 1949. Number 2, the Agreement on Trade and Intercourse between the Tibet Region of China and India of 29th of April 1954. Number 3, India's nuclear tests in 1998. Number 4, China's formal recognition of Sikkim as a part of India on 11th of April 2005. Number 5, the India-China diplomatic negotiations on the 123 nuclear deal in 2008. And number 6, the listing of Masood Azhar as a terrorist in the UNSC 1267 sanctions list on 1st of May 2019. From the Indian perspective, such narration might be useful in discerning how China negotiates and how this might have changed as China accumulates greater power in the international system, as well as the instruments and means that China deploys in the pursuit of its goals. We've often heard claims being made about the long historical connection between India and China. However, relatively little is known about their diplomatic interaction in the pre-modern age. Aside from travelogues of monk scholars from China to India in the first millennium of the Common Era, the sporadic diplomatic expeditions from Indian kingdoms to the Tang and Song imperial courts from the 7th to the 12th centuries. More recently, the Chinese government has been highlighting the naval expeditions of Zheng He in the early 15th century to the Indian Ocean, including the Kerala coast, in order to legitimize their growing presence west of the Malacca Strait. Evidence of the Indian, possibly Tamil, settlement in Wanzhou, in the Fujian province of modern China, also attests to trade links in the mid-second millennium of the Common Era. There is little recorded history of how the two major Indo-Pacific civilizations interacted in political and diplomatic terms. This might be explained by the absence of direct contact across a shared boundary because, despite Chinese claims to suzerainty over Tibet since the 13th century, Yuan Dynasty, Tibet was mostly left to its own devices. Since China's business with India was mostly through maritime routes, the opportunity and necessity of political interaction was limited. As the world became more interconnected in the 20th century, the political distance between India and China began to shrink. The participation of Sikhs and other Indian troops in crushing the Boxer Rebellion in Peking in 1900, as well as their ubiquitous presence among the security forces in the foreign settlements in Shanghai and Hong Kong, shaped Chinese perceptions about Indians. Visits by Indian leaders like Rabindranath Tagore and Jawaharlal Nehru to China in the 1920s and 1930s, and the support lent by the Indian National Congress and the Kuomintang, or KMT, to each other during their struggles against the British and the Japanese also shaped that discourse. The British Empire's push into Tibet for trade and influence, such as the Young Husband Expedition in 1904, led to more frequent diplomatic exchanges and contacts. This was followed by tripartite discussions between the British, Chinese, and Tibetans to delineate a boundary line between Inner and Outer Tibet, as well as between Outer Tibet and British India. During the Second World War, India also served as a staging base to send assistance and war material to the Chinese nationalists, led by Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek, who were fighting the Japanese. Yet, on India's part, these exchanges or activities were controlled by the British government of India and conducted in the defense of their empire. Indians, and for the most part, were mere bystanders. Therefore, in the true sense, India's diplomatic activity with China in the modern age really started after 1947, and especially with the founding of the People's Republic of China in 1949. Despite the vast political experience of India's first generation leadership after independence, they had limited opportunities of handling diplomatic relations, and the civil service was trained in the British methods and mindsets of diplomacy. The Chinese communists, on the other hand, had greater experience in dealing with foreign powers from the 1930s up to 1949, including with Stalin's Soviet Union, which was their fraternal partner, the Americans and the British, who were their allies in the Second World War, as well as the Japanese. Moreover, China had a generally unbroken tradition of diplomacy because, unlike India, it was never directly governed by colonial powers, and the Chinese Empire continued to have external relations. The leaderships of India and China were, thus, unevenly matched in terms of diplomatic experience when both became masters of their respective countries at the end of the 1940s. In 1948, the Republic of China, the precursor to the current communist government, then still based on the mainland, sent Dr. Luo Jianlun as their ambassador to interact with the leaders of newly independent India. Within a short time, it became apparent to India that the communists under Mao Zedong were overwhelming the nationalist government led by the Chiang Kai-shek. The government of India was faced with the question of whether and when to recognize the new regime in Beijing. Within 3 months of Mao declaring from Tiananmen Square the establishment of the New People's Republic of China, or PRC, India became one of the first countries to switch sides. The first chapter outlines the facts, how thinking evolved within the government of India over the question of according diplomatic recognition to the new Chinese government, as well as how China approached this issue. Since this was the first diplomatic act between the two governments, it has seminal importance in terms of lessons for our diplomacy. The Agreement on Trade and Intercourse between the Tibet Region of China and India of 29th April 1954 was another seminal event in our relations. Since the early part of the 20th century, the British government in India showed interest in trade and political relations with Tibet. In 1914, after the Chinese Empire had collapsed, the British government concluded the Simla Convention and set up arrangements for trade and other matters directly between the government of India and the Tibetan government on the principle that the 1914 Convention deemed Tibet to be autonomous in its dealings with the British government, although under the nominal suzerainty of China. In 1950, the People's Liberation Army, or PLA, invaded Tibet in the name of its liberating it. The government of India was compelled to revisit its Tibet policy and to open discussions with the People's Republic of China in regards to the rights and privileges that it had enjoyed as the successor state to the British Indian government. The Chinese, on the other hand, looked with suspicion at the policy and actions of India, and were determined to gain total control over Tibet and to secure India's recognition of the new reality through a formal agreement. The second chapter looks at the objectives of India and China in Tibet, and their respective diplomatic strategies in meeting those objectives over a region in which both had vital national interests. The third chapter deals with the diplomatic fallout of India's 5 nuclear tests on 11th and 13th May 1998. China's initially anodyne statement after the first two tests on 11th May was followed days later by a full-throated Chinese condemnation and led to the crafting of an initiative to isolate India internationally. This was not the first occasion for the two sides to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?